Well, we have interviewed federal politicians here in Canada, provincial politicians, as well as politicians in the United States, and some key opinion leaders in areas of medicine, environment, what have you. But today we're going to sit down and talk with Ottawa City Councillor Scott Moffatt, the councillor for Rideau-Goulbourne in the city of Ottawa, where I live. I don't live in his ward, but of course I live in the city of Ottawa. And as you'll hear the councillor say, it really is about being a city councillor as opposed to a ward. So I suppose in that sense, he's actually kind of like my councillor, once removed. He won the ward in the Ottawa municipal election in 2010, defeating a longtime incumbent named Glenn Brooks. He was born and raised on a farm in Rideau Township, which is now part of rural Ottawa. Really good conversation, very easygoing guy. Was good to have him on. And I have to say, Scott, I appreciate you coming on after you and I had gotten into a little bit of a spat on Twitter. But it's good character like that that make good politicians. So glad to have you on the pod. Hope you all enjoy the interview. Well, I'm really delighted to welcome to the pod a local, actually our first local official. We've had federal, we've had provincial. Now we have our first local official, Scott Moffatt, City Councillor for Ottawa, Rideau-Goulbourne Ward. Welcome to the pod. Yeah,
thanks for inviting me on.
Well, so Scott and I got into it a little bit a couple of weeks ago on Twitter. I just want to make sure.
That's like my Twitter life in a nutshell. Such and me got into it.
Well, that's all right. I love a good debate. But my favorite was when you said, well, it's pretty good coming from somebody with an anonymous account. I was like, well, is it really anonymous? Well,
yeah, you have to dig into it. Right? It's not right in the profile.
Right.
You'd have to get into the website. Then you finally see, okay, there you go.
Yeah, there I am. So I'm very real. Anyway, yes. I'm not one of those Russian trolls coming out of the Kremlin, you know? I guess that's a good thing.
Well, I think we have a lot of accounts around. There's a couple recently. One's called the Breton Flats East or something like that. And then there's another one that's called Ottawa Local Reporter. The guy's got like 22 followers. And they're commenting on everything. It's like there's no, like, who are you?
Exactly. Like, yeah. I for a long time, I was anonymous on there. I never, my general rule was I'm not going to deny if somebody knows who I am, but I'm not going to promote it either. Now I'm like, I don't give a shit.
I'm
40, right? Yeah. Like I'm 40 years old at this point in my life. It's all downhill from here anyway.
Well, I think it's great to be opinionated, but put your name to it. That's my only thought.
I agree with you.
Yeah,
those ones with the little egg on the profile, whatever, they've got the most to say, but they're the easiest to block, right?
So I don't block anyone. I have a strict non-block policy, so I don't block a single soul.
You need to tell that to the mayor. The mayor has a very strong blocking policy.
A lot of people do.
Yes, but anyway, let's talk about what we talked about on Twitter, which was so we talked about the advertising issue. So one of the things that I raised, or I guess it was Matt, a buddy of mine, I'm not using this to promote his campaign or anything, but he had said basically that, you know, one of the things that he wants to do when he runs for office, or if he's elected, if he's fortunate enough to be elected, is not to use taxpayer resources to advertise his face or his name or those kind of things. I mean, yes, to community events and keeping people informed. But I think what got him was there was that banner ad at the bottom that said, you know, Councillor Alan Hubley with his face and that kind of stuff. And I guess I wanted to get your feedback because you said it was more of an issue of your support was more along the lines of this is supporting community newspapers, which I didn't get in all honesty from your comments. So talk to me about that. Why is it okay, or why is it important from your mind that you use these resources for that kind of things? I get supporting community events, but you know, on that kind of that nuance piece, right?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, first, there's a fine line between supporting and then going overboard, right? But just to strictly stick to the community newspaper aspect of it, we saw the impact when Torstar and Post Media made that deal that essentially abolished an entire newspaper sector in this community.
Totally.
And it was all the Metroland papers. Now, the Metroland papers still exist in the periphery, so I still happen to write columns for Kentville Advance.
Oh, so you still do have that. Okay.
Yeah, so we do have the papers out there.
Yeah.
And then we have some local independents. So Mantic Messenger, for instance, they actually expanded their delivery into Richmond to fill that gap left by Stittsville News.
Yeah.
And then you see some newspapers came online. But these newspapers all need support.
Yeah.
They're always looking for advertising. And they're relying on local business.
Yeah.
On the local business in the community,
yeah,
which also needs support. So from our perspective, that is such a key delivery tool for us to get our information out there. And it's not just, hey, I'm Scott Moffatt. Every 4 years, I need your vote. Please remember my name.
Yeah.
It's really impactful stuff. Like we look at things, you know, I'm dealing with an issue right now in the North Core area.
Yeah.
It's a very hard area to reach in terms of communication.
Yeah.
You have to pretty much put letters right on people's doorsteps,
yeah.
which even then, admittedly, they don't always read.
No, because in the recycling bin.
They don't think it applies all the time.
Right.
So having the local newspapers as an ability to get out to people, because those things stay around.
You know, yeah.
They sit on your kitchen counter. They're there for a week. You're likely going to look through it maybe a couple of times, hopefully.
Yeah.
Right. So we put columns in those newspapers. It's amazing to have the column space. And by and large, the Messenger particularly gives it, you know, free. Right. Here you go.
Yeah.
Metroland.
They used to charge, didn't they?
So Metroland used to charge.
Yeah.
I never had any sort of Statistical News issue where they required me to advertise.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, in order to be in the Kentville Advance and the Carlton Place Gazette,
yeah.
they want me to make some commitments over the course of it. Really what sure. it is, it accounts to about 3 or 4 ads over the course of the year.
Yeah.
So I'll put in something about Remembrance Day. I'll put in something about Canada.
And who's going to deny that?
Right. And these aren't plastered with my face. There's,
right.
there's a message. There's generally a message about maybe promoting a Canada event. So we have Canada in the Gore, that type of thing, something yeah. in Munster. Let's get the people out to it kind of thing, helping the local community. And then, yeah, my name might be there
yeah.
and some contact info.
Yeah.
But that's just putting the contact info in someone's face so they know where to go, right? People need to know.
But I think
know,
the issue was the bigger, I think it's when you, so, and I'm not trying to cast aspersions on different counselors, but I think the issue is when you see Michael Kakish for, or no, is it Kakish down in Barrhaven or close to that or
Riverside
wherever,
South
Riverside
area,
South
yeah.
rather, and he's got, you know, bus ads with his face on it. I mean, I know you don't do that, but I think that that's kind of the line. I get it. You know, doing a column, doing advertising events, that kind of stuff. But there needs to be a differentiation, I guess, between putting your face on a bus shelter and putting information on a bus shelter.
Yeah, and I don't think we should, like, honestly, I don't think we need rules to be able to set that out.
Right.
People should just know what the best way to spend tax dollars on advertising. Like, what's
yeah.
the, I mean, advertising is, like I said at the start, it's a fine line between getting the communication out there that's necessary for people, for your residents to be informed.
Yeah.
So that they know where to go to.
Yep.
If they have an issue.
Yeah.
Because I'll be honest, after 8 years, there's probably still people in my ward that don't know I'm their counselor. It's just, I mean, you know, less than 50% of the people vote, right?
Yeah.
They're not engaged.
Yeah.
But if an issue comes up,
yeah.
they need to know where to go.
Yep. That's
because
fair.
They might not be engaged until that one issue that
yeah.
brings it to light.
Yeah.
And then they need to know, okay, well, I remember seeing something in the local paper about this. This is who I'll call.
Yeah.
But yes, you know, a bus ad, it's to each his own.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
it's going to be what the voters out there look at and yeah. see. And decide. It's not something I would do.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit there and rip someone else for doing it.
No.
The reality is that that's their choice.
Yeah.
I might not like it. I might not support that choice. But
it is what it is.
It is, unfortunately, yeah.
So let's talk about, so you've been a city councilor now for 8 years. Coming on 8 years. I actually remember meeting you. You won't remember this, but it was at the Richmond Fair. And it was when you were first running for office.
In 06?
Oh, God. I think so. Because it was... Well, so that would have, so you didn't win in 06.
I didn't
right.
win, yeah, I lost.
But you won in 2010. So I yeah. think it was that far back. I think it was
okay,
like 12
yeah.
years ago when you were, well, young like me, what used to be anyway.
Yeah.
Now you've been there for 8 years. You're running again.
Yep.
Your ward is fairly rural, but there's some urban areas too. Is that right?
Well, yeah. So it's predominantly rural. It yeah. has the two largest villages in the city of Ottawa in there. So Richmond and Manitic, both yeah. have a population around or over 5,000 people. There's some weird intricacies though, because the boundaries have been what they've been since 2006.
Right.
The urban boundary has kind of creeped into.
I was going to say, yeah, it's creeped out.
Rita Goulburn.
Yep.
So we actually have a big, dense development in Stittsville
yep.
that's currently in Rita Goulburn. And there's about 400 units built in Barrhaven that's currently in Rita Goulburn. And that line is distinct because it kind of cuts a jagged edge through a bunch of properties.
Right.
So you might, you know, your neighbor might be Jan Harder's constituent, and then I represent this person.
Is that right, eh?
Yeah,
it's that close.
It's pretty confusing. And you take one, there's one street in particular where the line actually cuts across it twice.
Yeah.
So so pretty much Councillor Harder's in the middle.
Yeah.
I'm north and south on
wow.
that same road. So it's going to be a little confusing come election time. We're going to sort it out next term. So
yeah.
come 20, council in 2019, we'll be looking to address that ward boundary issue. We'll be looking at ward boundaries.
Can you set them? Council sets the ward boundaries?
The city sets the ward boundaries. Okay. That's right. That's right. Okay. So staff will go away and do a ward boundary review,
yeah.
and they'll come back with some recommendations on yeah. how to soften some of these lines. One of the biggest issues is that Barrhaven's is the largest ward population-wise.
Yeah, that's huge.
So, you know, it pales in comparison to geography in terms of what I represent.
Yeah.
But it's almost twice the population that
yeah.
I represent.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I've always said that you know, geography has to be a consideration when creating wards. It yeah. can't just be population.
That's right.
Because I represent 11 different villages. They all have distinct sort of issues. I can't go into Munster and tout all the great things we're doing in cars. They don't care.
They don't care, yeah.
And it's not a mean-spirited don't care.
No, I get it.
That's not my life.
It's what's happening in your own backyard,
yeah, of course.
Right? Yeah.
So when we look at it, like I do a series of town halls each term, and we do 11 town halls. We go to each of these communities, and I focus on that community. I talk about what in that community because, you know, whereas I think if you represent, and this is not to oversimplify it, but I think if you represent Stittsville or Barrhaven, you're managing that whole area as a whole.
Yeah.
So if you bring a new arena in or something, if you do one of these projects in Stittsville, bring Splash Pad to Stittsville, yeah. it benefits Stittsville as a whole.
Yeah.
If
90% of the residents there yeah. are going to be saying, great.
If yeah. I put a Splash Pad in Richmond,
yeah.
everyone manages, like, okay, great, but where's ours?
Yeah, you know,
it's
exactly.
that thing, right? It's not a malicious thing. It's just that people choose to live in these different villages, whether it's Munster, Ashton, Carrs, North Corps, Burt's Rapids, and that's their community. That's their community. So I can't sit there and say, hey, listen, Burt's Rapids, you know, good stuff. I'm sorry you have really shitty roads, but if you want to drive up to Richmond, it's a bad example. We have bad roads in Richmond too, but there's certain roads, you know, there's that's a big subject.
I was going to say, that is not something that the folks in Richmond need to remember on election day. He's working hard for your roads, right? Okay.
Well, we've done some, but my goodness, there's so much more that needs to be done.
So let's talk. I actually want to ask you a question about your reelection, but first I want to ask you, so how do you, as a rural councillor, work in a council that is predominantly urban? And how does that, you know, I'm from Kanata. Obviously, that's fairly urban, but we used to be our own city. Mm-hmm. I wish if I had my druthers, I would much rather be the city of Kanata. Not because I don't love Ottawa. I think it's fantastic, but I think that amalgamation has hurt the community and the service quality has gone down. And I think we've kind of lost the Bill Tarrant vision of, I don't know if you've been out to Beaverbrook or what
yep.
have you, but
yep.
gorgeous. That was what Kanata was supposed to be. And now it's kind of development cookie cutter. But how do you differentiate yourself on council and how, you know, I don't want to say how successful have you been in getting what you wanted, but how do you manage to break through that kind of urban block that's there? And it's a big urban block. There's only a handful of you guys that are rural councillors. And so when you talk about roads, that's a big issue out in those rural communities. I've got friends out in Ashton. I've got friends out in Richmond. Mm-hmm. I mean, you represent them. Mm-hmm. That's a big issue. You know, their issues are always different. So how do you kind of break through that block?
Well, it's all relationships in my yeah. mind. There's no urban, rural, suburban. I know people want to make it that. For me, you know, some of my best relationships on council are with Catherine McKenney and Matthew Fleury.
Yeah.
You know, I get along with them well. I give them all the time in the world to talk about their issues and they reciprocate. They're willing to listen and understand anything that I bring forward to them.
That's awesome.
And much is the case when it comes back the other way. You know, I've got a ton in common with Matthew Fleury. It just happens to be we represent polar opposite wards.
Sure.
And we recognize that. We reflect that. I mean, that we understand that, listen, we're not going to be on the same side of a lot of these issues because there are distinct differences in who we represent
yeah.
and what the priorities are in our wards.
Yeah.
But you have to recognize that.
Yeah.
It's the difference between being a ward counselor and being a city councilor.
Yeah.
Is that how you take that perspective? If it's always my ward, my ward, my ward, well, why don't I just vote against everything?
Yeah.
You know, of course, nothing will get done. My residents won't be well represented if I just vote against everything. Maybe I'll look like I'm doing something,
yeah.
but there's really no way to go about it that's proper. And so when you take the perspective of being a city councillor, you look at everything. I mean, my background is customer service. I used
sure.
to, you know, I used to do things like read gas meters for Enbridge. But one of the things that did was it allowed me to be across the city almost every single day in every one of these communities.
Yeah.
So when you look at community housing, I've been inside those units. I've been in their basements. I've
yeah.
been, you know, 'cause I've had to read their gas meter.
Sure.
And
so you've seen it up close.
Yeah. So it gives you a different perspective,
sure.
which means that when someone comes to you with an issue and you understand it,
yeah.
they're going to be more willing to have that two-way conversation with you.
Yeah.
But I don't think that our council, like I think we've come a long way from amalgamation.
Yeah.
And I think in the last number of years, I think we've managed to bridge that gap quite a bit. You look at some of the leadership on council, some of the chairs of different things. You have you know, Rural Councillor Stephen Blay is the chair of the Transit Commission, or Rural Councillor Eli Oshantiri is the chair of the Police Services Board. You know, Alan Hubley happens to be the chair of the Audit Committee. He's a member of the Agricultural Affairs Committee. So you have four members of the five panel Agricultural Affairs Committee that also happen to sit on the Finance and Economic Development Committee, which some call, you know, kind of an executive committee of the city. So we're there. We have a voice. We have influence in the fact that there's that mutual respect between members of council. I'll always give all the time in the world to any member of council. And I think my experience has been they've been the same. The perfect example is what we've done recently with the Hard Rock file. That has come such a long way since 2012.
Explain what that is.
So the Hard Rock Casino, so it's the casino expansion
out in the east,
the Rideau-Carlton Raceway. So it's south. It's a Albion Road. So it's just to this side of Bank Street. Sorry, west of Bank Street. And in 2012, there was this notion of the OLG was expanding gaming across Ontario. And there was a big threat to rural facilities. It wasn't just Ottawa. It was about 16 different racetracks across Ontario that were threatened by this notion that the OLG wanted to put in bigger urban facilities to get more money. But on the backs of rural communities. So in Ottawa, we were able to bring that forward. Now, I lost that vote in 2012. It was a 19-5 vote. A year later, we were able to flip that script and put forward a motion that was supported at council to direct the OLG that, okay, you're coming here to Ottawa, but you're only coming to one site, and that's our CR. And then that was really a rural benefit. But it's a citywide benefit too, because the last thing people want downtown or in Kanata is a casino.
No
desire for a brand new casino anywhere else than one already exists.
Totally.
But it's a matter of getting that, having that conversation to make sure that this is what is wanted here from a jobs perspective, from a horse racing perspective. And it's not wanted elsewhere. And it's just, you had to have that conversation. And the conversation involved mainly the constituents, because us on council, we were so caught in a bubble that we weren't actually recognizing what constituents in Ottawa actually wanted. But it's a good example of how rural councillors and urban councillors work together to create something that has now been approved.
That'll be a great
facility.
Area.
I agree.
It will be. I'll go out there. I mean, I go out to the one over in Gatineau. Not too often, but I lose enough money that that prevents me.
I'm not a gambler. I could care less about it, to be honest with you. But it's the facility in itself. There's a hotel. There's a theater. Right. There's, you know, Hard Rock has their own sort of cycle of.
It's a different vibe, right? That'll be good. So talk to me about your re-election. So I want to talk about that guy that worked in your office.
Sure. I don't talk about it much, but we'll see what I say.
Well, no, I just, you know what? So for those that don't know, Councillor Moffat had an employee in his office. He was there for 2 years. Two and a half years. Basically ran like some crazy ops operation, I think, internal ops, got a lot of data, got a lot of information, has now decided, now that he is no longer a member of your office, that he is going to go and run against you in your ward. Is this, so what I want to do is ask you, like, is there any way that you can talk to, I don't know if the integrity commissioner or the city solicitor, who would have issues, but is there, I mean, I would expect that there'd be a privacy issue. Like, how much stuff did he or did he not? And I know you maybe can't say it, but are there issues around, did he take data with him when he left? Like, you, I know when you were in the paper the other day, you were saying, you know, there's going to be issues that he knows having just simply worked there. But are you concerned about theft or misuse of data that is already out there for your knowledge as a city councillor that he's maybe cribbed for his own purposes?
So when he resigned, which was he told me he was interested in running.
Yeah.
And then he resigned.
Against you.
Specifically against me. That's right. And, but that day, so when he goes through that resignation process, that's a process with the city.
Right.
With the clerk's office. And, to my knowledge, the city solicitor sent sort of the typical, you know, here's the things you need to consider, the municipal, you know, Freedom of Information, Privacy Protection Act, considerations that the stuff that you obtained in this office belongs to the city. Those are just standard things. Like there's two parts of it, right? There's your actual, you know, written sort of your print, your database, all the things that are private. But then there's just the stuff that you would just obtain, and you'd know in your head.
Yeah.
You would know that, hey, listen, in this community, I've been a little bit less than successful.
Yeah.
Let's start there.
Or there's these open files here, or this person in particular, or what have you.
We haven't been able to solve this problem, right? So I kind of know where to start. I mean, I could run a campaign against myself. You know, I'm not going to say I could. I think I could beat myself.
Versus Moffitt. There you go.
You could. I think I could take those two and say, you know, how would I? I don't think there's a bigger critic of myself than me.
Sure.
Always looking at the things I haven't done. That you remember them constantly. Like in my first year elected, there was a property off Prince of Wales at Carsonby that I wasn't able to help get a severance.
Yeah.
And the problem was, I so didn't want to say no that it took me forever to get back to them.
Yeah.
With the no. And because of me not getting back to them, I don't even think it was the no that upset them. It was the fact that it took me so long to get back to them.
Yeah.
But I drive by that house every single day.
Yeah.
And I think about it every single time.
Still.
And it's because you beat yourself up and you're always like, God, is there a way that I could come back and do that? Is there a way that today I could do what they wanted 6 years ago?
Yeah.
And so far there hasn't been.
Right.
But it's something that's always in your head.
You
spend so much time on your failures that you don't really focus as much on your successes. At least that's me. Those are the type of things. So yeah, of course, like I'm my own biggest critic. So when I think about it, I'm like, well, geez, if you know me and you know my office, then you'd start, you know, A, B, C, D, just go from there and then just work your votes up.
Sure.
But it is what it is. Like,
what was your reaction when he actually, like, so I was press secretary to the public health minister. I worked on the Hill for the chief government whip. I can't imagine a moment where I would have ever gone in to my minister's office and said, Minister, I just wanted to, well, first of all, thanks for this opportunity, but I've decided I'm going to challenge you for the nomination and run against you in your riding. I just, that is so foreign. And maybe it's because as a former political staffer, there is a premium on loyalty. Even after you're gone, I still feel, an attachment to the government that I worked with and the individuals that I worked with. So, you feel that, but what was your reaction? It blows my mind. It truly does.
I was surprised. I mean, I'm not going to get too into it, but I was surprised. Like it's how would you not be, right?
Right.
It's not like you hire people actively thinking, you know, they're going to seek to not have you be elected anymore.
Right.
And I totally, the regular path, you see us all the time, is that someone works in the office, the person doesn't run again, and then one of the assistants runs.
Sure.
We see that. We're seeing all that this election. We saw it last election. But I am running again. Well, and I don't think, I mean, as much as I, it's not as much of a no-brainer as it was in 2014.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about these things. It's not just, okay, well, I'm here, so I'll just stay here forever.
Like, sure.
There are considerations.
You have kids.
I have two extra kids
and
that
a wife
I had in 2018 that I didn't have in 2010.
Yeah.
And yeah, my wife, and she's working more. The kids are involved in more stuff.
Like
my wife's a teacher. She's a nurse at CHEO. Like she's busy too. So there's all these considerations about different things and your priorities and all that stuff. So these are all the things that you go out and you think of, right? And I'm an out loud thinker. And I think, and a lot of times the people I talk to about how I'm thinking are my staff.
Yeah.
So they know a lot about this. They know this process that I go through and thinking. So yeah, I think what happened was there was some uncertainty created in one person's mind that I wasn't seeking re-election. So I think they thought that. And then once they found out that I was, they're kind of like, well, I want to as well. I'm like, okay.
Then right, see you later.
Let's do it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Two more quick things for me. Actually, three, I guess. One, so how would you, so you're kind of a Southwest councillor, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So
on that bottom, the bottom triangle of that beautiful old that map of the regional municipality of Ottawa-Carleton.
So LRT. We're not going to get it out west until 2031. Now, but the funding period is 2031 to 2048. And I'm going to be dead by then, the way I live. but I guess I'm wondering is, you know, I know you guys have got it coming out to Moody right now, to where it is. But even then, it's not a park and ride. You got to take the park and ride at Eagleson and come down and all that. Is there any way, do you see any hope? And I guess maybe it might not be if the provincial Conservatives win. But if you're looking at the NDP who have just committed more money, for example, on transit or the Liberals, like as a Southwest councillor, you know, I'm sure you want your kids to have LRT before they're middle aged. So I guess I'm asking is there any hope that we could be squeezed in earlier to the LRT plan? Because as it is, the residents out in our ward or where you are, we're paying for it. That's a $3.2 billion plan, and we're paying for it with our bricks and mortar, but we're not getting it, right? And so how, I mean, you guys have done enough to get it to Moody, but how do we kind of get it a little bit further out there, even, you know, dry right out as a hub and spoke out to Canadian Tire Center, or, you know, and use that or dart it down Carling down some of the tracks that are there. I mean, how can we get that, and when can we get it earlier? Because that period, I mean, I'll be long dead. Well, I won't. Okay. Yeah, I don't want to be.
Yeah, that's right. Because there's two parts of the ward, right? So you have your Rideau part and your Goulburn part.
Right. So we're talking Goulburn.
Right, really, because the Rideau part's actually going to be very close to the LRT station at Earl Armstrong and Limebank. So really, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Mansk's going to be about five, 10 minutes.
Probably. But it's what you said, right? One community gets one. And
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then if you're over in, let's say, Richmond. See, Richmond is served by a bus route. It's the 283.
Yeah.
It comes right now and uses the 416 and connects at Bayshore.
Yeah.
The benefit for them is they'll be on the LRT faster.
Yeah.
A lot of the issues with that route and its delays that reduce ridership are happening in the core.
Yeah.
They'll have to transfer, which is not something they do today.
Right.
But
is that an express? Is that
it used to be an express, but it's no more express anymore. Okay. So it's now called, I think it's connection route or whatever it's called. So it used to be a rural express. They used to pay, like, you know, above and beyond what everyone else paid.
Oh, yeah.
But now they're not paying the same as everyone else. So they'll now connect, I guess, come 2022, 2023, that bus will now connect around Bayshore.
Yeah.
It won't go back to Moody because of the way the routing works. So that'll be some benefit. And, you know, who knows? Maybe with that, maybe there's increase in ridership. Maybe then we can increase service in Richmond.
Yeah.
And elsewhere, that bus also goes to Munster.
Yeah.
If we're to see more service in the West prior to 2031.
Yeah.
In all likelihood, it's going to have to be 100% funded by the upper two levels of government.
So this is one thing, as I said at the beginning, full disclosure, you know, my buddy's running for council. And I will tell you, I don't understand why it is that we're doing this one third. And people, when we go to the doors, pretty much say the same thing. I mean, if you look down in Toronto, I grant you, we are not Toronto, thank God.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's nothing for them to say, we'll give you $6 billion for your transit system and fund it 100% or 95% or
Kitchener-Waterloo, Mississauga, Hamilton. They just throw it at them.
Right.
They just throw the money
at
them.
And here we're begging. We're in the national friggin' capital. I don't understand that. Like, why, you know, we're burying ourselves in costs that we can't necessarily afford. And we're being denied funding. So how do we, you know, what do we do to push back on that? Because it is frustrating to see what's happening in one of the largest cities, and I would not begrudge them having it. But if you're going to give that same standard to the folks in Toronto who already have a fairly decent transit system, although it has its issues, they should be doing the same damn thing here in Ottawa. It honestly boggles my mind, Scott. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's absolutely puzzling. When you hear of these stories that come out, and I think it was Hamilton that recently got fully funded, I think it's even an LRT. It's unreal that these things happen. And they just say, okay, well, and I think one of the municipalities, I can't remember if it was one of the municipalities came to the province afterwards and say, hey, listen, there's a massive hole in our budget. So we can't afford what we thought we could afford. Can you help us out?
Yeah.
And to the best of my knowledge, the province stepped up and said, yeah, okay, we'll just fund the whole thing, which is incredible that they get that.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, you know, we scratch and claw for one third, and we appreciate the one third. Don't get me wrong.
No, of course, but we're scratching and clawing for it. I honestly, Scott, I don't understand how Ottawa gets the shaft the way it does. And I don't want to be on a poor me thing.
No,
but it is shocking.
I think the people in Ottawa has two definitions, right? City of Ottawa.
Yeah.
And there's Ottawa.
Yeah.
Ottawa, that's the federal government.
Right.
And you hear it across the province. Oh, Ottawa did that. Oh, Ottawa did this. I think there's, you know, I think sometimes the rest of the country kind of looks at Ottawa and say, well, you get everything because the government's there. But in reality, It's like me. It's the last thing I want to do is do work on my own sidewalk because it's going to look like I just spent a bunch of money on me.
Right.
I think the federal government's the same way.
Yeah.
We don't want to spend money on 24 Sussex because we don't want the rest of the country to think that all we're doing is spending money on ourselves.
Which we should actually spend money on 24 Sussex.
I agree.
But I agree.
Yeah. But that, I think that's one of the realities.
Sure.
I think there's almost less emphasis on Ottawa from the federal government's perspective because of that potential optics, whereas the rest of the country actually thinks they are getting the attention.
Right. Yeah,
especially in Toronto, I think, as you see, well, we're Toronto. We're the only ones that are going to look after Toronto. But I mean, it's really hard to, without the province actually coming out and saying, why do we fund 100% and other one only 33%? It's hard to really,
of course,
quantify
we can spitball it and, right. and yeah.
And that's really what we have. And maybe they say, well, it's all you asked for. I find that hard to believe. Because on specific ones, and we've actually been successful, because when we said, well, we won't go to the airport or trim unless we get fully funded. Well, they fully funded us.
So what now? So why wouldn't, so, you know, why wouldn't that be our strategy going forward? We're not going to do anything. Make it an election issue for every party, whether you're Liberal, NDP, Green, PC, I don't really care. The end of the day, we're not moving forward with these infrastructure projects. The federal government has announced billions of dollars in infrastructure money. That 100% can come to here.
Yeah, well, I think that's certainly phase three, right? I mean, I think phase three doesn't happen before 2031 unless there's full support from federal provincial prop. And you know, yeah, maybe like that brings the board.
Not us paying at all. Right. Like it's right. All them.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think with people like Karen McCrimmon, to be honest with you,
yeah,
she's the reason why they got the EA done, the environmental assessment, because they paid for it.
Yeah.
They came forward and they paid for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe with the right people in place, they push for that and they actually get the funding for this because they're doing the right thing. They're asking the right questions. They're going to the right people and getting the support. I don't care what party you're from.
No.
If you're bringing improvements to the community,
you want
to be just taken from somewhere else. First of all, I mean, you can't, it's nice and all to have this, but if you're going to go and defund over here or download stuff to us because we don't want that either.
Yeah.
It can't just be at all costs, but it's, if you're always making smart choices and investing in your community, I mean, we all represent the same communities.
Yeah.
We'd like to see that. And the other challenge too we have is just infrastructure in general.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of footing the entire bill. It's awesome that y'all come forward with money for capital projects.
Yeah.
Nobody's giving maintenance dollars.
No, exactly.
Renewal is a massive issue. And it's not just Ottawa. It's every single municipality across North America dealing with infrastructure renewal.
Yeah.
You hear it. It's a big issue in the States.
Yeah.
And the federal government's talking about investing in America, but they're talking about the interstates.
Yeah.
No one's talking about the roads that people drive on every single day, the residential streets.
Yeah. You can lose a car in a friggin' pothole.
Yeah.
I mean, it's brutal.
And municipalities can't afford to maintain them themselves.
Yeah.
It's one thing for Ottawa. We have more money than most municipalities in Ontario. I worry about the smaller municipalities that can't afford. They can't afford their policing.
Yeah.
And with the policing costs going up, how the hell are they going to afford their own infrastructure in their small towns?
Yeah.
And that's something that has to be looked at going forward is who's going to help with infrastructure renewal, not just building new, brand new roads.
Yeah.
Allow us to maintain the ones that we've already built.
So let's pivot from LRT to the Sens.
Yeah.
And I only ask this because I maybe am the only one in the city that says this, but so Sens are likely, maybe, I don't know, it depends on where Eugene Melnick is at any given day of the week in his own head, but let's assume they move down to LeBreton Flats.
Sure.
We've got 75 acres of land out there, maybe a little bit more, and the Carrell Center, Palladium, Canadian Tire Center. Maybe this is a dumb question, Scott, but why can't we build a hospital out there? And I'll tell you, you know, you represent Richmond. I'm in Kanata. We've got, we've got Carp, we've got Stittsville, we've got Munster, we've got all these little areas. And when the Ottawa Hospital was going out and doing their, or the Civic, when they were looking for the new campus, and then they ran into issues because Poliver had kind of promised this one area and then it went down the tubes or what have you. I couldn't understand why we aren't talking about that kind of investment in our city out in the West End, because we're growing. I mean, we're one of the fastest growing areas of the city. And right now you got to go down to the Queensway, and we have beautiful land. Well, beautiful, I guess if pavement is beautiful, there's lots of it. But I'd love if the Sens move, and I guess it wasn't so much a question on the Sens, but what would you like to do with the land? I know I would like a hospital or an emergency hub or something where people can kind of come into there and make it a research institute. But what would you like to do with that area? Like, what do you see as a possibility there?
Yeah, obviously I think anyone's going to oppose a brand new hospital.
Right.
But I think it has to be, you know, maybe it's part and parcel with that. Maybe it's something like that. You identify a need, and maybe you use that land for a need.
Yeah.
But from the other perspective, there also has to be something that drives traffic that gets people out there. You have, I think we saw what the impact of the 2004-2005 NHL lockout did.
Yeah.
Almost every restaurant in Bell's Corner is closed.
Oh, that's it, eh?
Right. So that whole strip along Terry Fox, which is filled with restaurants.
It's
if
dead.
You lose the building, what happens there, right? So I think there needs to be, so you're talking about jobs in the West End.
Yeah.
You're talking about healthcare. That's certainly one aspect. There's no question. But what are you going to do to fill up those nights?
Yeah.
The hotel nights, where you're going to fill up the spots in the restaurants. The tourism perspective, I think, is a big one. Is how do you fill that gap?
Is it a mixed use facility? Like, I honestly don't know what it could be. Like, I really don't know what it could be. Like, do we raise it to the ground? Like, what do we do with it?
I think the building, when it's done, I think when they finally move out, I think the building will be, it has to be torn down.
Yeah, it's going to be about 30 years old by then.
I mean, it's not Maple Leaf Gardens, right? Right. These things weren't built to last. Like, Maple Leaf Gardens is now Ryerson. It's a grocery store. Unreal. It's a fitness. It's incredible, that building.
Yeah.
But the buildings today, the buildings built in the 80s, 90s, they weren't built to last. No. The Saddle Dome is these things aren't things that are going to be converted into something else.
Yeah.
We see it all the time that these buildings get destroyed, that the big massive football stadiums in the States that cost billions, and then you just tear them down. So something has to replace it. But yeah, the question is what? You know, we had spoken with senators, the city had spoken with senators about developing that plan.
Yeah.
At the time, I remember them saying a plan was forthcoming.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we never saw it.
Right.
But you know, one has to hope that they own the building, they own the land, so that they would have something in mind as to where that goes next, because they're not going to want to left. I mean, they got a good deal on that. Eugene Melnick got a great deal on that building. Let's be honest.
Yep.
Same with when Rogers bought the Rogers, the Sky Dome. It's that same idea. They got at pennies on the dollar, really. But it's a part of the investment, right? It's a part of the investment strategy. How are you going to afford one thing without recouping some costs over here? Yeah. Who buys it? And for what? I think that's a massive question. I don't think anyone has an answer for that, because I think it's so uncertain as to what you could do there, or as to what needs to be done there. I think anyone would agree that you can't lose something like that without trying to find a replacement with something.
It's got to be a pull. Like, I don't want to see, I don't want to see those. You're quite right. I don't want to see those businesses die. I do think that we could probably subdivide an area there for a high quality health facility out in the West End, because I think that would help. Because there's people going out to Armbrier or Kempville or whatever.
There's a Carlton Place Hospital. Kempville's put a bunch of money in theirs. And I can tell you, people from North Gore, they go down to Kempville. And they'll go up to Queensway too.
Yeah.
But it depends on what you're going for, right? I mean, we kind of know that.
Sure.
And Winchester has invested a bunch of money in theirs as well for people from the South End, from Medcalf and Vernon.
That's right.
They're going down to the Winchester Hospital.
But you're right. Like, we have to do both, because you're absolutely, like, nailed it. If you go down that strip on Terry Fox, there's, I want to say 50 restaurants, maybe it's more, but there's a lot. And there's a lot of people that depend on that resource. And not only just to go out with, you know, get a break from the kids or take the kids out, but pay the bills and to put food on the table. So that's certainly something.
And they're packed the 80 nights
always.
A year. Those games are there, right? There's the one thing about the games after people leave, they go to it, but they also go there to watch the game.
Yeah.
Or on the away nights, you know, 82 game schedule.
Yeah.
It's big. And every time there's a concert in the building, every time there's Stars on Ice, when there's, you know, these different things, people go out before, they go out after.
Yeah.
It's because of the building.
Yeah.
But that's why there's a desire to put the building in LeBreton Flats. It brings people there. There's no question. That's why you do these
things. That's right.
You don't just put them there because it's a good spot.
I just worry we're losing sight of those folks out in our neck of the woods. And I include you, obviously, in that, because I agree. I think it'd be a great location downtown, but I do worry about what we're going to do with that land and what's going to happen to the community as a whole, because you're right. It does have those tentacles into everything else.
And that's why you see, I think, in so many cities across North America, they build one stadium right next to the other stadium, they tear the one down, that becomes the parking lot.
Yeah.
They don't make the big move.
That's right.
There is a big push for downtown stadiums. I get that.
Yeah.
But if you only do that without thinking about the impact on the other side, then that's a mistake that you're making just from a planning perspective.
Well, and you know what? In fairness too, I always hear people say, oh, it's stupid to put it out in Kanata. You know what? It's worked quite well. Thanks very much. We've got four lanes now going out to Kanata. You don't get bogged down in traffic as bad as you used to. Sure, it sucks. You're sitting in there for 15 to 30 minutes, you know, to get out there some nights, depending on how the weather is. But by and large, it works fairly well. So why break it?
The big misnomer is the folks that sit there and say, well, they should have put it downtown years ago. Well, that was never an option.
No.
That was not the land that they owned.
No.
They own land in Kanata,
yeah,
and it worked out quite well, I think, at the time when they built it out there and then built up all around it.
That's
which
right.
is all the land that they owned at the time.
Yep. Anyway. Well, Councillor Moffat, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I wish you well in your re-election bid, truly. Thanks, I mean that. Yeah. I do respect what you guys do, and I know that sometimes that doesn't come off, not only by me, but a lot of folks, because I think we like to be a little bit caustic, but what you do is important, and you know, city politics is as close to the people as you can possibly get. Everybody says, oh, well, it's not very sexy. It's sewage and potholes and roads. And
flicking the switch, turning your tap on, walking on a sidewalk, it's all city.
Yeah. And you can't, if your basement overflows, because everyone's going to hear about it and your house is going to be ruined if there's not people on the ground that are fixing it. Yeah. And so folks like you, I respect what you do, and I appreciate you coming on, and you know, I'm glad that you're not advertising either in the with your face in the community newspapers. Yeah, no yeah, bus ads,
it's funny,
Scott.
Though, because you did find the one. I honestly, in my mind, I never do banner ads. I think you sent me the one, which is like from 2016.
Literally, all I did is I go into Google and I wrote Scott Moffitt Metroland, and then I clicked on image, and yeah. there it came up first.
That was just like, hilarious. I'm like, good on you. I'm like, because I do not remember doing that, but I think in retrospect, I'm like, okay, I think there was actually a deal offered. I think someone actually offered. I'm like, okay, well, I'll do it. And
well, listen, we dump on you guys, and sometimes it's because you're easy kicking bags. But truly, I know that I've heard this from a number of folks that you're one of the good ones on council, and it's not to impugn the others. I think there's issues with some of them, but I will say
it's a low bar. No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, it's a low bar. Yeah, very low bar. No, but honestly, you're one of the good ones, and appreciate you coming on. And hope you come back after you're reelected, after you put away this this little spy from your office. So, anyway, thanks, Scott.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Bye.